Hi, I'm Emily, and I'm about to have dinner in Old Town, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much. Yes, welcome to Outside the Loop. This is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. Great to be here with you today. This is show number 759. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Of course, you can check us out online. We're on Twitter at Outside the Loop. We are on Instagram at Outside the Loop Radio and on Facebook. And of course, download the podcast of this show for free wherever you get your on-demand audio. Did I mention it was free? Yeah, I think I did. Bob Ferguson is our engineer in the studio this morning. Good morning to Fergie, and good morning to the show's producer, Colin Seaman. Hi, Colin.
And good morning to the show's host, Mike Steven. Good morning, Mike.
Oh, look at you. Look at you. That's so nice.
Good mornings all around.
Good mornings all around. Well, looking forward to a nice weekend. And we heard this week that there were some restrictions being lifted in the city of Chicago. And, you know, some of the big changes, restaurants and bars can increase capacity to the lesser of 50% or 100 people. Large indoor venues, like what's going on at the United Center and in theaters, concerts, etc., now at 25% capacity. Smaller venues can operate, again, lesser of 50% capacity or 50 people. Festivals coming back with restrictions, of course. But I didn't see that coming this week. I mean, this happened on Thursday. And it just sort of, I don't know, I felt like it just sort of hit. I'm vaccinated. I'm very fortunate enough to be vaccinated, but I'm still, I don't know. I think I still have to get used to the fact that we can start to move a little bit more freely. Maybe I've got to ease back into society, Colin. Maybe that's it.
Well, I think it was one 80 degree day and got everybody rearing, you know?
Yeah. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was the 80 degree day that we had like at the beginning of the week or whenever that was. And Mayor Lightfoot was like, boy, all right, we got to get on this.
We're going to have more of these days, so we need to be prepared. No, I'm with you, Mike. I don't know. I may be speaking for you. You can confirm or deny, but
sure.
I feel like I'm with you on the hesitancy. I don't think I would feel this way if I was vaccinated and without children. I think that's it because they're still, you know, kids are, you know, low risk. You're okay. You want to be safe with them, but you just don't know, right? If it was just me, I would feel comfortable being a vaccinated man going and doing all this stuff. So I see why we are opening up in this way, you know, responsibly, but it's the kid factor, right? Like they don't have the vaccination yet. They're still running mm-hmm. through stuff. Why risk it? That's my mentality, at least.
Yeah, no, I totally hear that. And I agree with you. Why risk it? And, you know, I don't have a problem going to small get-togethers with people who are vaccinated, you know, especially if it's outside. Like, that's not a problem. It's when, like, I'm reading this Block Club Chicago piece that says street festivals are coming back, right? And the first that will return will be the Windy City Smokeout, which is an annual barbecue event that's expected to host up to 12,500 people per day come July. Now, granted, all the vendors, performers, and staff will be required to be fully vaccinated, and attendees will have to prove that they're vaccinated, and non-vaccinated attendees will be allowed, but they will have to prove a negative COVID-19 test taken within 72 hours of trying to enter the event. I don't know. That's a lot of people in a pandemic.
Is this where we start talking about the Vax Pass? That's a thing, right? That we're talking about?
Yeah, I think it will be a thing at some point. Yeah. I don't know.
But again, if all of those conditions are met and I'm 28 and I've been inside all year, like,
right.
I'm probably going. Probably getting with a couple of my friends who are vaccinated or are, you know, 72 hours a test. I'm probably doing that. So I get it. Like, it's really starting to, I don't know, we were sort of doing this and you were running the calculus last year without vaccinations about what is your risk reward versus the mental sanity of like going and seeing somebody else, right? And like expanding your bubble just so you weren't isolated for 24/7, 365. And now that's like starting to edge out a little bit more, right? And so it's a calculus.
It is. I mean, do what you feel comfortable with. Just be careful. We'll all get back to normal eventually one day. We'll get through this. We'll get there. Outside the Loop show number 759 is fully vaccinated, though, so it's ready to go for you. We have a lot to do in the program today. We'll be talking with an up-and-coming hip-hop artist who's also a spoken word coach at a local high school. His name is Rich Robbins. Also, we'll talk about some Illinois labor history. Today is May Day, so that's very important. And when we talk about labor history and what's up with corporate real estate in the Chicago suburbs, it's all coming up on the show today. Take the needle in the arm, just like Outside the Loop 759 has done. It's nice that I get to talk to people again face to face after we've not been able to do that for so long because of this pandemic. I'm sitting down here with Rich Robbins, who is a musician here in Chicago, and he is also a spoken word teaching assistant at Oak Park and River Forest High School. Two really great gigs. And Rich, thanks for taking the time to hang out here, man. You've got so much going on with you. New album coming out called On the Horizon. It's coming out early summertime. Tell us about what you're singing about, man. What's the music about here?
Yeah, so I think the album is not about one thing. It's kind of a multifaceted thing, and so some of it deals with tackling, you know, toxic masculinity. Some of it has to deal with accountability. Some of it has to deal with Black empowerment. But I think for the most part, a lot of it has to deal with tapping into your own potential. And that really applies to whatever you're seeking to do. But really believing in yourself and being self-reflective along that journey. So it's kind of like a, you know, kind of an ambiguous thing, I guess, that, you know, what the album is about per se. But I think the title kind of hints toward what we're aiming for here, right? Like, as the world opens back up, there's a lot on the horizon that we're looking forward to. And I think the album very much is just a reflection of that.
Tell us, where did you have to go to get this material in terms of yourself? Like, where do you dig inside of you when you're talking about some of these, you know, big topics that you just said right there? I mean, we're talking about racial issues, talking about gender issues. Where do you go for that?
Yeah, so a lot of it comes from meditation. A lot of it comes from just taking some time to reflect with myself and just kind of see like where my voice is needed and where I also want to take it, right? So I think I just had to, in terms of digging, I mean, there's like a lot of digging and there's also not much digging, because like I am myself, so I didn't have to like go to like a specific place in my head in order to write a lot of these songs. A lot of them just came from like, you know, hearing a couple notes or melodies and then just kind of vibing to, okay, what did I consume today? You know, what I have a song called Red Meat. So literally, what am I consuming? I consumed meat today and it made me feel disgusting. What does that kind of sound like? What the consumption or the overconsumption of things can be a metaphor for a song, and then you just make a song out of that, you know. And I say it like it's easy. It's not necessarily an easy thing, but I think it's learning to balance that, you know, how deep a song can be versus how you deliver the song can be like a very accessible thing. But the metaphor behind it is really dope, you know, or a lot deeper.
I know I'd be lying if I said it ain't bother me. At this point, I owe my body an apology. Red meat, blood on the dinner plate. All this dead weight, no wonder I got stomach pain. If I gotta die young, I'ma die hard. If I gotta die alone, it's gonna be hard. Slow down, had to breathe for a second, just look around. All this family I got, I thought I needed you.
I listen to your music and it's empowering in the sense that, you know, it's not like you're dwelling in the trauma. You are talking about being Black, you're talking about issues of gender and other things. And it's like, you know, why do people listen to music? It's not to like live in that trauma, it's to be empowered and to enjoy it. And I think that's what's coming through on this. And that's a, you know, kind of a fine line to walk, you know, because you could just live in that trauma and rehash it for folks, but you're not.
Yeah, you know, it is a very fine line, because as a black artist, you want to be a proper representation of what the people that look like you go through, right? But also as a black artist, you don't want to only be that thing. You don't only want to be a political entity. We are not inherently political entities because of the country that we live in. But outside of the country, we are flesh and bone and dreams and potential, right? And so it is finding the balance between, like, all right, how do I, you know, every song, I guess, is political depending on what kind of, like, philosophy you bring into the table, right? But also every song doesn't have to be trauma-based, you know? And so, you know, we were talking earlier about, like, I'm a big comic book fan of the Marvel Universe, and they have, like, a whole slew of movies coming out with black lead characters. And I'm very curious to see how they go about, you know, can a black lead character be just a character, or do they have to be, you know, this black story behind them, and there's blackness behind them, and there's trauma behind them, and let's explore that. And usually, like, for Hollywood, it dwindles down to, like, a very stereotypical representation of what the trauma looks like. So, you know, I want black folks to be able to just exist in this space that they are not politicized. You know, there is a song on the album that talks about black love and, like, how they politicize our love, and they call it black love, but it's also just love, you know. So it is a fine line, and I hope that line was balanced out really well in the album. I think it has been. I think the folks around me agree, you know, people who have gotten a chance to listen to it. But I will say, like, I guarantee that no matter what kind of, you know, philosophy or angle you are kind of coming with, you will be satisfied with the project and with certain elements of the project, you know.
Let's talk about the day job. It's a great day job for you. You, again, are the spoken word teaching assistant at Oak Park and River Forest High School. And that team, under the leadership of the great Peter Kahn, who is just like a giant in the spoken word community and an amazing human being, you are definitely you're part of that leadership on the team. And the team itself has done really well over the years. Let's explore that connection between the students that you get to interact with every day and what you're doing with your music. What is that connection?
Yeah, so I think it's important to talk about before getting this gig, this job, I was a student in back in the early 2000s. I was a student here at OPRF, and I was going through the spoken word program, and I graduated, you know, being kind of like a leader in the program. And after high school, I kind of thought that was it for spoken word. And I found this scholarship program called First Wave, which now a couple other Oak Parkers have been a part of, but it's a 4-year full tuition hip hop and urban arts scholarship program. And they have, I mean, you go to Madison, of all places, UW-Madison, right?
Like, you would, right, not the center of hip-hop, necessarily.
No, not at all. Like, quite the opposite, right? On the outer skirts of hip-hop. But they have this really amazing program that you come in with a cohort of about 14 other artists, and they're spoken word artists, they're activists in their community, they're hip-hop artists, breakdancers, graffiti artists, you name it. And you're just immersed into this world, and they kind of train you to be an artist on and off stage, how to move with this deliberate, like, I am an activist and I am a scholar and I am an artist all at the same time, and I'm equally those things at the same time. And so coming to the high school and to working at OPRF, I wanted to treat the spoken word poets like they're full artists. You know, you're not just a student in my eyes, you're not just a poet, but you are an artist and you participate in the creation of culture. And so, you know, I put them through a lot of training that I went through in college. So we had to do, like, physical training while creating art, right? So, like, you know, the kids will be running around laps around the school while reciting poems, or they'll be doing, like, wall sits and planks while doing poems. And they, you know, but I think when they struggle together, they learn how to build together, and they learn how to heal together too. And that is, like, that is some teamwork that that you don't just get by just, you know, sitting at a desk or just writing poems, right? And so I think, like, fostering that team was really important So that's how I've kind of brought my experience into the job. But the kids inspire me equally the same. You know, like they, I know what trend is coming up before the trend happens, because you know you're hanging out with 14 to 18 year olds on a daily basis on the job, right? And so you know just being able to pick their brains about what social media is being used and what are the artists. I just overheard a conversation of kids talking about artists that I like, and I was like, oh, I didn't even know that they listen to them. That's cool. I know that, you know, those artists are doing the right things. But it's this conversation of being inspired, right? Like, I cannot be a good teacher if I'm not a good student to this day. And so the clothes that I wear inspires them, and the conversations that they have inspires me. And then it just kind of boils down to the, you know, going to the studio at the end of the day and then just trying to allow that inspiration to reach the microphone and reach, you know, the notebook and pad.
And they're good. I mean, the kids, the youth, they're so good. And we don't always talk about them in that way in terms of the narrative about youth today. But boy, I mean, I, as a classroom teacher, am inspired like you are. And I, what you said really sort of struck me is, you know, to be a good teacher, you need to be a good student. And boy, if we're not learning stuff from them, you know, we absolutely are. And I think we need to kind of keep that mindset as a society, right, going forward.
Right. No, absolutely. And I'll give you another example from the album. So there's a song called Pretty Monster on the album. And it's very genre blending. I'll say that. And I think it's going to be really, really good when it comes out. But that song came directly from working in this building. Monster. And so, it got me thinking about the idea of being a product of your environment. And at such a young age, you don't really know the term accountability. You don't know what that means. And I think because we are the adults that they see on a consistent basis, it's kind of up to us to instill those terms into them and show them, like, you know, just because you are a product of your environment does not mean that you use that as a crutch to act out however you want. But you have a ripple effect. You have consequences based on your actions. And so whatever, I don't even remember exactly what I experienced that day, but I took it to the studio and created this song called Pretty Monster, which is kind of a dedication to those students. And I think when you hear it, you kind of piece it together. But it is talking about being a product of your environment, and don't blame me for being a product of my environment. I'm not violent. Just the environment around me taught me to be violent, not teach me how to be peaceful, kind of thing, you know.
So tell us, how can we follow you? What's the social situation? Lay it on us.
Yeah, all right. So you can follow me on all social media platforms at Rich Robbins, but the O is a zero in the name. It's not even me trying to be clever. It's just somebody else took the name Rich Robbins before I could get to it. You can follow me everywhere. I'm pretty active on Instagram. I'm trying to get more active on Twitter. But I don't know. Sometimes I'll be tweeting and I'm like, no, just delete that. That's not
Twitter. Is like, it's just such a weird place, but I don't know. Do we need it?
Look, some people need it, I guess. You know, I was telling you earlier, like, I'm a writer, so I feel like I have a diary already, but some people use Twitter like it's a full-blown diary, which I'm like, you know, if you're trying to put your business out there, okay, I'm going to be entertained by it, but I don't know if I'm going to do that. and I think I'm going to, you know, maybe this is like a sign that I'm just getting older, but I think I'm going to download TikTok and see what's up with that when the album comes out. There's a couple cool projects, particularly with some dancers that we're doing for some of the songs, that I think TikTok would be a really good platform for. So I'm gonna run it by the kids and see what they think.
Yes.
And if they think it's cool, then I'm gonna be like, all right, let me do the TikTok.
I'll tell you, then teach me, hold my hand as we jump into the TikTok pool, man.
Yeah,
cause I'm not quite there yet. Well, look, Rich Robbins, everyone follow him on Twitter and Instagram. And the O is a zero in Robbins, Rich Robbins.
The O is a zero, but on streaming platforms, you just spell it regular Rich Robbins. I've had some people get that confused before. So just to clarify.
Hey, this is awesome. This is really great what you're doing. You're a musician and, of course, the spoken word teaching assistant at Oak Park and River Forest High School. best of luck, man. You're doing some great all-around work. Keep doing what you're doing because we need more people like you.
Hey, I appreciate you. Thank you very much for having me.
Today is May Day, or International Workers' Day, and on May 1st, 1886, about 40,000 Chicago workers and more than 300,000 workers across the country walked out of their jobs in order to protest unsafe working conditions and to advocate for an 8-hour workday. With us to talk about labor history and the current state of labor locally is Larry Spivak. He is the president of the Illinois Labor History Society. Check out their website, illinoislaborhistory.org. Larry, welcome to Outside the Loop.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be talking to you today.
Yeah, likewise. So, May 1st, right? I mean, it's a big day in labor history. But, you know, let's just keep it local here for a minute, as we like to do on this program. A few days later, in 1886, a couple days later after May 1st, I mean, we're here in Chicago. The Haymarket Affair goes down. This is in basically kind of the West Loop area, which is one of the sort of the most monumental events in labor history, happens right here in Chicago.
Well, actually, I think it would be fair to say in world history. The Haymarket Affair, as you call it, which I appreciate because so many people are brought up to call it the Haymarket Riot, which is totally inaccurate. It wasn't a riot. It was a peaceful protest. Until a bomb was thrown, and nobody knows who threw it, and several police officers died, and a number of workers that attended there died as a result of the officers opening fire in the dark after they panicked. But it's a huge labor history question and conundrum, and I say that because this is a holiday that is celebrated all around the world. I mean, billions of people celebrate May 1st, International Labor Day, because of the events that took place in Chicago. But it's still kind of an unknown day in our history, although here in Chicago, since 2004, when we got the monument dedicated at Des Plaines and Randolph, where the Haymarket tragedy took place, we host a gathering every single year there and dedicate a plaque from an international labor organization.
So, I mean, to your point, this is, you know, here in Chicago, this is something that was really, it is known all over the world, yet we're not really celebrating it here in Chicago or thinking about it. But, you know, I think when we look at something like the Haymarket Affair, which, again, we had workers in the streets peacefully protesting, you know, labor has had this incredible history in Chicago over the years. And, you know, you think about why that is. Why is Chicago, do you think, sort of at the center of when we think of labor history? Why Chicago? Why is this sort of the hotbed for that?
Well, I think there are a number of reasons, but a lot of it just has to do with the placement of Chicago and the industrialization that was taking place after the Civil War. As we all know, Chicago, city of big shoulders, etc., was a hub, and it was a became a hub of industrialization because of transportation, because of the railroads, the Chicago River, of course, and the lake. And so the demographic, the geology, the topography, the demographics all conspired to create a great place for manufacturing. And immigrants from around the world came. And, you know, of course, the fight for the 8-hour day, which really began after the Civil War, was never successfully enforced, even though laws were passed. So the movement was strong in Chicago as well as in New York. And the German immigration to Chicago also factored in because 1/3 of Chicago was German speaking in the late 1870s into the 1880s. And many of the Germans that came here were progressives, were activists, were prone to organize unions from their history of coming from Germany. And not just German, because it really is a very diverse section of people in Chicago. So it's an interesting thing that so much of Chicago's history is based on diversity, rapid industrialization, the power of capital, and those forces came together at that point in 1886 over the fight for the eight-hour day and the fight for the right to peaceably assemble, because the history of organizing at that point in time was that workers would go on strike and they'd be shot at, they'd be beaten, they'd be clubbed, and people were fed up with it. And so it's kind of was a culmination on May 4th of 1886 at the protest at Haymarket Square.
You know, talking about how workers have been viewed in society over the years, I know that in the time of the 19th century, like we're talking about with the Haymarket Affair, you know, I think there was this association with workers as anarchists, and some were, right, in socialism and, you know, sort of like lower classes of society. And we like to think that we've evolved maybe over the generations since then, but how are we looking at labor today? I mean, what's the state locally here of the working class, of the worker in Chicago today in this hotbed of labor history?
Well, that's such a huge question and so little time to talk about it. But what I would say is this. The way Americans now look at unions is more positive than it's been in decades. Most polling is showing that over 65% of the general public supports the idea of unions. The disconnect is that because of the strong anti-labor laws that have existed in this country, unlike anywhere else in the developed world for generations, people actually don't even understand how you get a union. And as you probably saw, even though it's not local in Alabama, the failure of the union to get representation at Amazon is primarily because the power of these massive corporations to keep unions out is unfettered by any enforceable labor laws. But here in Chicago, in Illinois and Chicago are some of the most unionized parts of the entire country. You know, we always say Chicago is a union town. There are more local ones in Chicago than anywhere else in the country, which goes back to that question of, you know, why organizing was so central to the working class back in the 19th and early 20th century. Mm-hmm. The state today, Chicago's not all that different from anywhere else. You know, workers are well underpaid. Wages have not kept up with inflation for the last 50 years. Since the 1980s, workers' wages have declined. The only good news is that if you're in a union, your wages are higher, anywhere from 15 to 30% more than workers in similarly situated industries or professions. So, it's been a tough road for labor, but Illinois is still more progressive because we're not a right-to-work state, although the public sector has taken a hit in the last 2 years because of a Supreme Court decision, and the public sector is now the most organized facet of workers in this country. You know, public sector meaning state, county, municipal, education, healthcare, all the people who work in government. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and right now, the year of COVID, the focus of workers everywhere has been to negotiate safety protocols and to just have protective equipment and the kinds of things that would enable them to be safer and have their clients and their residents and everybody safe in the community that deals in that workplace.
And you over at the Illinois Labor History Society, you, I know, have in the past have had programs and events, and you make sure that the history of labor is continuing to be told so we know the struggle for working people and how that has unfolded over the years.
And it's not just to tell history for the sake of history. We believe that when people learn history, they're more prone to be willing to participate. One thing we know, what I truly believe, and I think history shows this, is that you can only have a democratic society if you have the right to organize, the right to collective bargaining. You have the most democratic, the most fair, the most equal societies have that right. And it's important to tell that story. Democracy, collective bargaining, unionization go hand in hand. And unfortunately, that story is not generally told. But we tell it, and we host every year on May Day at Haymarket Square, gathering. This year, it'll be socially distanced, but we have at 11 o'clock today, Italian Labor Federation, who is going to dedicate a plaque virtually, and the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists at 12:30 will be dedicating a plaque as well to the Haymarket. It's every year been a tradition here, and people from around the world have learned about coming to Haymarket Square, where prior to 2004, there was no monument or anything there, which is really a phenomenal issue.
Well, there is a lot to learn, a lot to think about, a lot for us to take in when we discuss labor history. And you can check out IllinoisLaborHistory.org. That is the website for the Illinois Labor History Society. Larry Spivak is the president of that organization. Larry, thank you so much for talking to us today. This was really interesting, and happy May Day, and let's celebrate that going forward.
Yes, come to Haymarket Square.
As we continue to live through this pandemic, we see the effects of it on various aspects of our society. With our normal routines upended, we are adjusting to what might be our new normal. Well, real estate has been impacted by COVID-19 over the past year. AJ LaTrace is the editor of a publication called RE Journals. That is a commercial real estate publication. And recently he wrote a piece on the Chicago suburban office market. You could check out rejournals.com. AJ LaTrace is here with us once again on Outside the Loop. AJ, nice to talk to you, man. How you doing?
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me. Great to reconnect and talk about what's going on here today.
And congratulations. I know you are a new father and you've got this new job, so life is pretty boring for you.
Yeah, no, things have been good lately. So definitely a contrast to where things were a year ago.
Well, it's nice to talk to you again, and let's talk about commercial real estate. So the trend before the pandemic here, we saw big corporations moving back into the city, and out-of-state businesses were sort of taking another look or a close look at Chicago maybe to move to, but you ask in your piece if the pandemic will reverse this trend. Talk to us about how this might happen.
Yeah, you know, this is a really interesting subject. You know, over the last 10, 15 years or so, we've seen these legacy corporations that moved out to the suburbs, maybe in the 80s or 90s, decide to move back into the city. And a big part of that reason is that they're following the talent. We keep hearing about how young people want to live in major cities, and this isn't anything unique to Chicago. You know, Gen Xers, millennials, they want to live in the up-and-coming neighborhoods, be around live music, food and nightlife districts, things of that sort. Mm-hmm. So companies followed the talent back into the cities. And with the pandemic, the big story last year was this theme or this idea of the back-to-the-suburbs moment, at least for residential real estate. And while the suburban housing market had been pretty soft the last few years, in the last year or since the beginning of the pandemic, there was renewed interest in the residential market, with people buying homes out there, you know, having yards, outdoor space, having extra bedrooms for a home office. And now we have to think about what that would mean to the corporate workplace or the corporate office if the people, the workforce that they moved to the city for is actually moving to the suburbs. Does that mean that companies will then have to reconsider a move then back to the suburbs, or maybe some sort of satellite office in the coming years?
Boy, I mean, it kind of makes your head spin. I mean, not only are we in a pandemic, but then you know, the trend is, okay, these corporations, these bigger corporations are moving into Chicago, and now, oh boy, people are moving out of Chicago, and so maybe we've got to go back to the burbs.
It's pretty wild. I mean, I remember, I think it was a couple of years ago, Zurich, the insurance company, they had previously been headquartered in this Twin Tower development in Schaumburg, but then they built this brand new, really architecturally striking corporate campus in Schaumburg, only, you know, a mile or two away from their previous headquarters. And I think a lot of people, like myself included, working in covering real estate, were thinking, you know, is that really the right move? And coincidentally enough, I mean, no one would have predicted the pandemic happening. And in some cases, depending on what happens in the following years, Zurich may have played their cards right. And then one of the brokers I interviewed for my piece was saying that, you know, maybe McDonald's made the mistake by moving to the Fulton Market a couple of years ago.
I mean, it just, again, makes your head spin. It's like up is down, left is right.
And that's a great point, because I think that's the other thing, is that no one really knows exactly for sure how this is going to play out. You know, maybe we all get vaccinated and a year or two from now, downtown Chicago is thriving once again. But right now, it's still hard to say.
Yeah, there are a lot of unknowns, as you point out in this piece. And you also talk about sort of the health of corporate real estate in the suburbs. And I know you look at a few areas, and there was a study that was done. How are things going when we look at corporate real estate in these areas around Chicago?
Yeah, so in terms of the suburban market, the submarket that has always been strong is around O'Hare. You know, so stuff like in Rosemont, you know, some of those office parks and campuses right around O'Hare. But for the most part, you know, again, the trend had been moving back into the city, and not only moving back into the city, but a very type of office product, you know. So like you think about the stuff in Fulton Market or the stuff like the old post office, it's very amenity rich. You've got these kind of stylized gyms and lobby spaces and bars and things like that. In the suburbs, you don't really have a lot of that kind of stuff. You know, it's very much more, when we think about, you know, the 80s corporate office campus, mm-hmm. in the suburbs, still kind of like that. But, you know, there's still a lot of space. There's still a lot of space to fill out in the burbs. O'Hare's doing the strongest. The northwest suburbs still are basically trailing the pack in terms of the greater Chicago area.
I mean, could companies get a deal, these corporations? Maybe they say, look, Chicago's not cheap. Maybe we can go back to the burbs. We can get some spread out real estate. I think about Sears that was in Hoffman Estates. I have no idea if it's still there. I feel like the Sears company has been sort of dying off, but I've been to that headquarters in the past, and it's just like this sprawling campus of glass and steel. Could we maybe see a return to that?
Yeah, again, that's another one of those things that's still to be determined. But your point about getting a deal, I mean, you know, some of the brokers that I've talked to who are tenant brokers, so basically the people who are bringing a company to the table seeking office space, you know, they're telling me that the world is your oyster if you're bringing a qualified tenant looking to sign a, you know, a 10-year lease or something of that sort. And, you know, a lot of office landlords are taking, not necessarily lowering the sort of face rent price, but they're offering concessions. So, you know, basically giving, you know, a couple months of free rent, or offering allowances for build outs or other things like AV equipment. But then, you know, back to the theme of the suburban office campus, you know, one of the interesting things was that the old AT&T office campus, I believe that was in Hoffman Estates as well, I have to double check. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, there was a plan to redevelop this as like a mixed use development. It's called Bellworks. And so the suburban office campus as we knew it a couple of years ago was just dead in the water. And then you had developers coming up with, you know, ways to change them into sort of almost like residential and retail and office complexes. And now, you know, I think with a lot of people my age, you know, in their mid 30s, starting families, you know, leave the Logan Squares or the, you know, South Loops or things of that sort, head out to Wheaton or Downers Grove or Arlington Heights or Barrington. I mean, who knows? It's hard to say. We could see more office space out there or more companies having a presence out there. But, you know, the other thing that's another unknown at this moment is how much office space companies ultimately want to lease or rent, because we're at a point now where vaccine rollout has been moving along. You know, there's this pandemic fatigue setting in. People want to get out of the house, but companies aren't sure if they need space for everyone in the office. And so, you know, within the city, a lot of people are downsizing. There's certainly more value to be had in the suburbs, and more space for the price. But, you know, again, I think in the next, especially in the next year, we're going to see how much space companies ultimately decide they want in the post-pandemic work environment.
Yeah, and we will see what happens. I mean, so many of us have been working from home and we're getting used to it while getting frustrated because maybe we want to get out of the house. But companies might say, well, look, we could save some money on real estate and have people work from home, still get the same productivity and go forward. Well, everyone should check out what AJ LaTrace is writing. You can check out this piece. We will link up to it. It's called Chicago Suburban Office Market Hangs On as Pandemic Fatigue Sits In. It's part of RE Journals. AJ LaTrace is the editor of RE Journal, and that is a commercial real estate publication. Online, rejournals.com. AJ, it's always a pleasure to talk about real estate around Chicagoland with you, and we'll be in touch, man. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks, Mike.
Yes, the Rap Party for Outside the Loop show number 759, where Colin and I do a little recap of the show, offer some takeaways. How about Rich Robbins? I mean, really impressive. Just a great guy, talented. He's putting out some good tunes, and I love his story. And I'm excited to see where his album, where it goes from here. On the Horizon is the name of the album coming out this summer. It was really great sitting down with him. And he's so reflective, and he's got some great musical taste, too. So, hey, Rich Robbins, you know?
Yeah, you are a lucky man to be in the building with him.
I like that. No, you're right, though. I mean, look, Rich Robbins, inspirational, right? Totally inspirational. And I like I was saying with him, you know, it is empowering to listen to his music, the stories and perspectives that he's telling. And I think that also resonates with kids, because he's really well-respected. Does a lot of great work at the high school with the spoken word team, and that team is a powerhouse. It's year after year, always they do really well in the Louder Than a Bomb Poetry Slam. So Peter Kahn is the head coach, and he's also an English teacher. He's a great guy. So phenomenal program, and you know, I just love to hear that he's out there making music, getting inspired from kids, and I think we can all take some inspiration from Rich Robbins. On this International Workers' Day, happy May Day. Let us not forget the importance of labor history and what was going on here in Chicago. I thought that was cool because do students learn about that in school? Sometimes I know we talk about it, but in our classrooms, but you know, that's not happening all over the place. And it's pretty monumental when you remember what happened and labor, the struggle for labor continues today. And so I think that's inspirational too, to get a little perspective on our history, that people have really, you know, gone through a lot and endured a lot for things like safe working conditions and the 8-hour workday, etc. So that's also kind of inspirational.
Yeah, it was in fact a May Day organized protest and demonstration that was the first time I had just taken out a loan to get sort of a new camera, a DSLR, like this is maybe 2010. And I was like, I need stuff to film. I need to get out there. I need to start using this. I need to start connecting to Chicago. I had just moved to Chicago, and I was out there, and it was a May Day demonstration that connected me with other creatives in the Chicago area. And the amount of love, the amount of passion, the amount of resolve to demonstrate, to celebrate this day in Chicago was just something that I was very impressed with. And I will always remember that as a very formative moment for me in terms of my own personal journey to Chicago. I remember just being really taken back by the amount of support for demonstrations and celebrations of May Day here in the city of Chicago.
Yeah, really at the one of the hubs of the labor movement in the world, really. I mean, certainly the United States, but as Larry was talking about, the world. So, read up on the Haymarket affair. It's a really important part of history. And AJ LaTrace, I'm just inspired by real estate. I'm just trying to think of inspiration. But AJ,
I'm inspired by AJ.
Yeah, I am
doing work with New Kid.
Yeah, exactly. He sounded remarkably awake for having a brand new kid. And like, well, what, like 2-3 weeks ago? Was it that? It was that recent, right?
Yes, it's very, very recent. This is what, I don't know, I would call the fog. I don't know about you. Mm-hmm. This is the fog period of parenthood.
And he was remarkably lucid.
Lucid?
Yeah. 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 Full sentences and everything, and they made sense. And but look, it's, again, how the pandemic has affected us. It's interesting to see what's going to happen with real estate in general. But then we think about these big companies that have had these sprawling campuses. What's going to happen? Back to the burbs? I don't know.
Yeah, I think he brings up a good point in terms of, so people want more space. I think that's pretty clear, right? Like, mm-hmm. over the past year, I can work at home, or I can be location neutral, and I'm going to go get more space. Okay, so does that necessarily mean that you need more office space out in the suburbs, or are we just talking residential space? Because businesses are thinking, we don't need as big of a brick and mortar footprint anymore. So I'm very curious to see what this does and how it reshifts both locations, right? Actually, all three. You've got the urban, the suburban, and then the exurban. I'm really curious to see how they all shift.
Yeah, a lot of unknowns. Definitely the barrier between office and home life has gone away for a lot of us. But we shall see. Again, as AJ was saying, we just don't know how this is all going to shake out, but we see some trends going, and that's what he's writing about. So check out what AJ is writing about at RE Journals. And speaking of checking out, well, maybe I should rephrase that. Speaking of ending, no, the show's about over is what I'm trying to say. We're not like dying. We're just going to end the show.
We're just putting it out to pasture. That means dying, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We are taking it to the limit one more time.
Weren't the Eagles from California?
We didn't even talk about Lakeshore Drive, man. We didn't even talk about it.
Yeah, it's going to get renamed. That's cool. I'm into it.
I think that's fine, number one. Number two, I know that that's sad for you because it hurts your classic rock history. And you got, the boys, the three names. I don't know them, but they did the song.
It's Eliota, Haynes, and Jeremiah. That's
right. And you're going to be sad because somebody's, your classic rock song isn't going to hold up as well.
Well, it's totally going to hold up. I mean, it was legitimate. Like Lakeshore Drive was Lakeshore Drive back when they wrote that song. So, it's capturing history at the time. It's going to endure. And then I'll sing it to you, Colin.
I'm never going to listen to that song again. If it's the place is renamed, they have to rewrite the song and then I'll listen to it.
I don't know if all of them are still with us. Speaking of checking out, but we'll see what happens. I think Steve Krakow profiled that band.
He did.
We'll have to dig that up.
He did. It was one of the more popular bands that he, because, Guardians of the Galaxy played it.
Right. That's what it was. Right. Okay.
So it's like, why are you? Never mind. I love Steve.
Yeah. Send all your emails to Steve. Hey, we got to go.
Send all your emails to Andy Herman at A Herman. I'm still here listening to the end every week at gmail.com.
That's right. He's not even on the OTL email system. He's just on Gmail.
Andy, I listen every week till the end. I love you, Mike's mom. I'm still your favorite. I know. At OutsideTheLoopRadio.com.
And that's the wrap party for Outside the Loop show number 759. And that just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 759 is all wrapped up just for you. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for being our engineer. Thanks to Colin for producing the program today. And have a fantastic week. I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop on 720 WGN.